Welcome to Forever White Belt. I'm your host, Adolfo Ferranda. Today on the show, we have Dave Tint. Dave is a 35-year-old BJJ brown belt under Chad Bingham. Dave reminds me of the people I grew up around in blue-collar Sonoma County. A straight shooter, hardworking, gritty, you know, the salt-of-the-earth type. I haven't met too many non-professional practitioners who study jiu-jitsu for hours a day off the mat. I think this is what makes so many of my encounters with Dave always feel like instant connection. As you will hear in the episode, Dave genuinely loves jiu-jitsu. It's one of his defining characteristics. He's a technical and dogged practitioner who has several competitions under his belt. Dave travels to several academies to train and has an impressive network of training partners and instructors he is connected with. He has competed in one of Jeff Glover's undisclosed location tournaments, getting his hand raised by Mr. Glover himself. Dave recently suffered a massive heart attack that went undetected for several hours after training one day. It's a shocking story of mistakes, bad decision-making, and it's really a miracle that he's still alive, let alone training again. When I think of Dave, I think of Hunter S. Thompson, both of which lived hard, did things we wish we had the guts to do, and has a wisdom that sits right below the ostensibly rough exterior. Okay, some housekeeping notes. For the protection of everyone involved, there have been moments in the interview where some specific details have been edited out or just beeped out. We discuss graphic medical conditions, bodily functions, and there's a liberal usage of swearing. As such, this may not be the episode to listen to around the kids or for those with queasy stomachs. Just a reminder to please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify and share this podcast with a friend. It really helps us out. Leave us feedback and suggestions on how we can improve the show and consider becoming a patron at anchor.fm/foreverwhitebelt. Like us on Facebook and TikTok at Forever White Belt. Check us out on Instagram at Forever White Belt Show. Go buy your swag at teespring.com/forever-white-belt. If you ever get to beautiful Northern California, please come roll with us at North Bay Jiu-Jitsu in the city of Novato. There are amazing instructors and everyone there are great people. Also, make sure to mention the podcast and get 2 weeks free. As Hunter S. Thompson once said, a man who procrastinates in his choosing will inevitably have his choice made for him by circumstance. And with that, I give you Dave Tint. All right, Dave, welcome.
Thank you for having me, dude. I really am honored. I was listening to your podcast the whole way down here in the 4 hours it took me to get here from 6 a.m. in the morning, so.
Yeah, so everyone listening, we're in Novato, California. Dave, where'd you come from?
I'm staying up at a place called Forest Hill, California, and I'm training at a place called Precision Jiu-Jitsu out in Citrus Heights. So a lot of driving for me living out in the woods. It takes about 45 minutes to get to class, to Precision. All gyms, please get showers of some type, you know, yeah. for us long commuters. That's like the one thing.
So Dave, you're a brown belt, right?
I am a brown belt. Just got my brown belt.
And you're a brown belt under who?
Chad Bingham over at Precision Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah, he actually made a point to say during the brown belt speech, I'm not stepping on anybody else's toes, am I? And that's mainly just because I travel a lot. I've been a lot in ATT over in Portland and a couple like gyms, you know, Lone Wolf Jiu-Jitsu and a lot of places in the Bay, Hawaii, just traveling everywhere, just to trying to get in as much exposure as I can. I'm a big believer in it's a language and I want to go see how everybody speaks it so I don't discriminate any gym. I'm always trying to get in there.
What's your weight and your size so the listeners can get some context in terms of why your game is sort of the way it is?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little guy, 150, 160 on a good day. And I get my guard passed a lot when I first started jiu-jitsu, you know, so I'm definitely called sneaky, you know, setting up little traps, trying to play that mental game a little bit, you know, especially with bigger guys that are like 200 pounds. If they're playing that smash wrestling pass game, I kind of have to really play to it and let them do what they're going to do because me trying to stop is never going to happen. So I kind of try to like that whole Bruce Lee kind of like being the water, just very flowy. And I've always prided myself on athleticism and being quick and being able to outlast people on cardio up until late, you know, but which you know all about, which I'm sure we'll get into. I haven't been able to do cardio, so it's kind of transitioning my game to another place right now.
What I noticed is your baseball choke. The way you just set up it, it's super sneaky. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, man. Yeah, that baseball or the suicide choke is so sneaky. And a lot of people hate on it. A lot of people fall in love with it, you know. For me, jiu-jitsu is all about like, hey, do you tap or do you not tap? And so I don't really try to be too opinionated about it, but the way it works for me is it works best against wrestlers. It works best against people who love that pressure passing, and particularly the knee cut pass. You know, as soon as that knee cut, a lot of people like going to people's left sides. As soon as that knee hits the right side or hits onto the mat, I'm popping the person's collar and just letting them fall right into that trap. And it's such a timing thing.
And you're doing it from your bottom of side control, typically.
Yeah. So if you want to kind of get a visual, I like doing it from side control. Although you can do it from a lot of places. You know, the last competition I was at, I actually got rolled through like one of the first times ever. Like this Charles Gracie guy just like really just like ran through me. So that guy runs through me, and then I'm like, dude, like I need to get my shit together. And I'm playing with this another tough purple belt, and you know, my hip bump sweep's not working, nothing's really working. And the Trifon looks at me and he's like, plan B. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, suicide choke. And like, and the guy was in the because I know it works so well with people, especially if you don't know me. It's almost like it's too easy.
Yeah.
And in that instance, I was in full guard, and like the guy was just like so ready to pass my guard. And that's what the suicide is so nice for, is you're letting the person pass your guard. So in that circumstance, I was in full guard. I got my right hand into his left collar if I'm facing him. And I basically just opened up my guard and let him go right into the knee cut. As he goes into the knee cut, I'm solidifying that grip on his left side. And then my left hand comes up and finishes the baseball bat, you know, and at that point. What I'm also learning is it's a lot like the Homer Simpson. If you ever see him go like do 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 do, you know, just like a lot of people know who's listening to this podcast, it's all in the hips, you know. And if you can like swivel those hips like back and forth and get your hips in the right position, the suicide choke, what we're talking about, comes on so quick. And I think why I like it so much, and I'm like known for it traveling around different gyms, is I put people to sleep with it.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with the stubbornness of passing. You get these wrestlers who have ingrained in them like pass, yeah, smash. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as they do pass and they think they're in the advantageous position, I'm like, that's exactly where I want you to be. Mm-hmm. And then before they know it, this choke's coming, and the defense is actually very simple. You know, but a lot of people just get caught off guard with it and they panic. They think they're in a dominant position, which they're not. And then they go to sleep before they can tap. I sold my company January 2020, and with the intention, like I'm 34 at the time. Mm-hmm. I probably have like maybe 5 more years of like hard, like solid competition and traveling around and wars and stuff. And I'm like, let's do it. You know, I was like, I got money saved up, but I'm like, why not? Life is short. Yeah. I'm not going to get an opportunity to go this hard later in life. Mm-hmm. So I sold everything. I scared the shit out of my family, and you know, could come from high standard kind of family. Everybody's got houses and families and kids and stuff. And I sold the business I created from scratch to go pursue like wrestling with people. I actually remember when I did do that, my mom was pretty concerned. And I told her that, you know, when I slap hands with somebody in the gym, I can learn more about them in 5 minutes and show them more about who I am and my character and who I am as a human being and a person. I don't give up. I push through adversity. I'm polite. I'm respectful. My hygiene is good. You know, there's so much you can communicate within 5 minutes of the world that I could never do at a Rotary Club or a socialite event or some entrepreneur type event, you know, where you're getting around and just socializing, boozing and talking to people. And I've never found something so powerful in this world, you know, and I'm addicted to it, man. I'm just so addicted.
Yeah. What was it like for you day one then? Did you get the bug immediately or?
Oh, day one jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, what was that like?
So day one jiu-jitsu was for me.
Let's talk about the first month or something.
Yeah. Oh, I know day one. Day one was Hoist Gracie chemo fight, you know. And my friend just showed me on a tape when I was like 20 years old. And it was like chemo 270, whatever the fuck he was, like walking out on a crucifix with Jesus tattooed against Hoist Gracie, 160 pounds.
Yeah.
And I watched him tap this dude out. My buddy was like, who do you think is going to win? I'm like, dude, obviously the big ass dude. I didn't know anything about his fighting, you know? And I saw him tap him out. And I think like a lot of people, weird is like, especially little people, were like, I need to know how to do that. Like, what the fuck? And he brought me into this place called Third Street Boxing over in Hunters Point in San Francisco. Yeah. Hole in the wall. I don't even know if it's still there. Sal. when I was 20. It was like 15 years ago, and I just like beat me up. I gave up on it. I was really into pickup basketball, actually, and always been an athlete. And I went to USF as an undergrad around then in my early 20s, a little later. I was working before I got into college. And when I was playing pickup basketball, this Half Gracie Blue Belt was playing in our game. And he started a gym called Hybrid over in San Francisco. Is Half Gracie lineage. And he told me, he was like, hey, man, you're an athlete. And maybe you want to try jiu-jitsu. And I was like, yeah. You know, I've done a couple of classes. I think I should get in. And I went in there, man. And I remember, like, I'm never going to be able to get a blue belt. Like, I was like, I'll never be able to tap this guy. I'm like, this is like wizardry, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I had like so much immense respect for it. I was like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, and like, I felt like it was even different because like the first time at Third Street, I was just kind of getting beat up. And I just fell in love with it, you know. And actually, that's where I met Sean Roberts. Nice. I know he's been on your podcast. Mm-hmm. Like one of the coolest dudes in the world. Yeah. Just like true inspiration for me in my early years. Wow. He gave me my first stripe on my white belt.
Wow.
And you know, for me, I've always been a morning jiu-jitsu guy because I'm really busy. You know, if I wasn't in college, after college, I was starting and running my business, and I'm always up early, 4 a.m. And I like those early morning classes. And I would wake up on Geary and second Geary in the city and skate uphill up to Golden Gate. And then around right when the sun was coming up, man, I have that this like beautiful skate all the way down Golden Gate to go drive wow. To one-on-one sessions with Sean Roberts wow. because no one else woke up in the morning, you know. Jeez. And it was a hole in the wall gym. So I just like had this dude, he wasn't getting paid much and stuff like that, but he was just like nicest dude. And doesn't matter if there's one dude in here or 50, it's like he was just like his passion for jiu-jitsu and the technique and mastery of technique was just, you know, something that I really admired. And he was a really cool dude. He was a hard skate back and he'd always drive me back home and stuff like that. He had a bumper sticker on his car that said, I'd rather be choking you out, you know. And I just loved everything about it, man. Just like, yeah, this style. I came from like partying and drinking a lot when I was a young kid. And it's not like a lot of direction. And I always remember I wanted to be the best partier and the best drinker and stuff. But when I found jiu-jitsu and I saw all these people, you know, it's like, I don't know if you remember first seeing like the upper belts like hang out in the corner. It's just like that aura, you know, that they have, you know, and that and it comes with earning it, hard work, you know. And there was something about that I was just enamored with from day one. I just could not get enough. Still to this day, I'm more obsessed than ever, you know. And obviously things change a little bit, you know.
So what's your journey then through the other belt colors look like then?
Blue belt is right when I really started competing, man. And I was scared. I was terrified to compete. Like, I just didn't want to fail. And I had this kind of attitude, actually, where I'm like, I don't need to compete. Like, this is just going to be like, you know, just a sport, like self-defense. And, you know, it's a good way to stay in shape. And my coach out in one of my best friends, I call him coach, is a kind of a joke, but he is over at Charles Gracie, San Mateo. And he was competing, you know, and we were actually, to kind of go way back, we about 10, 11 years ago, we were really partying together. I had gone back into jiu-jitsu, so when I went back to hybrid, and I started talking about it with my friends I was partying with, and this guy, Derek, had happened to do a year of jiu-jitsu like me, like he went in and gave up on it. And, you know, I got him back. And I'm like, hey, man, we should go. And we both walked in together. He walked into hybrid. And he's now black belt competitor at San Mateo. We walked back in at the same time.
Wow.
And 9 fight to wins under his belt.
Wow.
Just savage human being. Worst shot, day labor, like hard. He always tells me I got him to walk back into the jiu-jitsu gym. So, I mean, that's kind of one of my things is getting people into jiu-jitsu or particularly I love teaching beginner classes because I love trying to get that first spark. And I was a white belt like when I got him to go back in and look at the trajectory that just like the one little shift, you know, just getting him to go in, turn that guy into a fucking black belt, you know. So at first, white belt, I was an evangelical. I was just like, I couldn't shut up about it. Like I'd be talking to my clients and about, I ran a dog walking business, owned a dog retail store. Mm-hmm. And I'd be in the middle of conversation and be like, jiu-jitsu? I do jiu-jitsu, you know? Like, and like, did you say martial arts? You know? And like, I couldn't study. It's all on my head. Yeah. It's all I thought about.
Yeah.
And it was bad because I learned like people don't like that, you know? You know, and you have to kind of like pump the brakes a little. If you really want to get people to do what you're doing, what you fall in love with so much, you got to like be a little more passive about it. And then blue belt, I went to like Rumble in the Redwoods, Sunnyvale, I think. And I got beat two times. You know, I had no idea what a competition was. Mm-hmm. You know, I got the first match. I went all 5 minutes and I had no idea what the score was. I was so gassed out and I went over and I like kind of fell down by myself. I've been going to tournaments without coaches by myself the whole time. So I lost the first match. I was so tired. And then they called my name again, you know, and I was like, fuck, dude. I was like, I got to go again. I was like, I'm gassed. I was like, I gave everything I had. So I started thinking, I'm like, maybe my shoulder hurts, you know, like a little bit. And like, and so I'm sitting there and then they're like, time for you to go. And I'm like, okay, fuck it. Like, I got to just go do it. I'll go lose. And the second win came back and ended up getting tapped out with like 10 seconds left and lost both matches. Mm-hmm. And then I was even more tired. I like knocked over my water. I was like spinning. And then they call my fucking name. There was only three people in my division. And they call my name, like, Dave, to the podium. I'm like, what are you talking about to the podium? And like, I went to the podium. They gave me like this participation medal. And then like, but I was spinning. And like, I knocked over the water. I didn't even pick it up. It's very not like me to make a mess and stuff. And then he gave me a medal. And I went out and started puking in the fucking hallway. And then a black belt from my gym, Andrew, he saw me. He's like, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, this first competition, dude. It's like, all right. But like, so that's kind of what I tell people at story. I mean, ultimate failure. I mean, I guess I could have popped my arm, which I've done in comp. I've had like 17-year-old kid pop my arm and it's sucked, you know. It's like, but it's like, it kind of goes into the whole point. It's like, I love it, man. I love the fact that I went and did that, because it's like, I would not have had that experience if I didn't go put myself in. And what do you do with that experience? You go back to the gym and you tell everybody about it, and you see what you did wrong. And nowadays you got everything on camera, and you can just go back and see where you made your errors. And then you go back the next weekend, you sign up, and then you go win a match, you know? And it probably, I don't even remember, but I competed maybe like 20-something times at Blue Belt. And I don't even remember. It was probably like half and half, like wins and losses. But I think it took a while to even get a win.
So it sounds like you put competition in really high regards as well, right? You think that's a really important sort of a factor in the journey of your jiu-jitsu process, you think?
I would say so, yeah. I like it because it's hard and it's testing yourself. I'm not a high-level competitor by any means, you know. I train with high-level competitors, and I'm not one of them, you know. I know what that is like, you know, that winner mentality, you know, and that going, it's a different thing, you know.
But for the general practitioner.
Yeah, yeah, and for the general practitioner, you know, it's kind of just like, it's just like jiu-jitsu has something for everybody, you know, and like, I think competitions are a great way to step out of your box, go test your game, and get some information, you know, and that's how I look at it. So I kind of get like kind of hippie about it when I start explaining it, like, because for me, largely, just personally, it's all about self-development and putting myself in an uncomfortable situation and growing from that situation. And there's nothing more from that. It's like, I don't give a fuck about the medals and the trophies and the accolades and shit like that. It's really cool. I like the footage, you know, I like going in and getting like cool stuff. But like, I've always separated myself from like, you know, those world champions, the pan champions, which I respect so much, you know, to get so perfect at it, you know. But
but that's like the 1% of the 1%. So that's understandable. Yeah. Yeah. So when you talk about footage, were you one of those people that would look back and study and sort of reconcile, like, let's identify all the issues and then how do I address these type of things?
Yeah. Or I've seen my losses got hundreds, maybe one video 1,000 times. Like I get obsessed. I also do that in life in general. I might listen to this, what we're talking about, over and over and over again, you know. I'm just very interested in my failures, particularly. I want to see where I messed up. The moments where I win and like maybe I put on Instagram and I put someone to sleep or something, that's cool. But it's like the ones I really obsess about, man, is like, I almost fucking had that guy. I almost had him, dude. Like this one, the one I'm specifically talking about was at Glover's, and it was my third match of the day. I had won one, got knee barred, and then this was for the bronze medal. And I fucking wanted it so bad, dude. And the guy was just way bigger. It was 200 pounds and below, you know, and I was maybe 160. And it was just, I had him in my triangle. I locked it up. And it's just, I've studied it so many fucking times. And I know if I got him, he would not get out of it. He wouldn't. And it was just this simple little thing. And I saw it. But then there's always that thing. It's like, maybe you think it was that simple. And then you get with the guy and then it's not that simple. Speaking of Glover's, I mean, like, that guy, I think, holds one of the coolest tournaments, like, in jiu-jitsu, dude.
Can you talk about it? Like, talk about this thing that Jeff does or has done.
I wonder if you have to edit it or anything, how much Jeff wants me talking about it.
Well, he promotes it on IG.
Well, you know? During the pandemic, I guess the pandemic's over, maybe in a couple of days. The first time I went to Glover's, man, it was, like, the middle of the pandemic. And he didn't give us any instructions. He was like, just meet in this parking lot. And like, okay. And so I'm like there, and I'm always early to everything. And I'm there, and I'm like, what do I fucking do? And I'm like looking around, and like, okay, that dude looks like he does jiu-jitsu. That guy's got some cauliflower ear. And like, I'm like, what's up, bro? Are you here for Glover's? And like, we all just start kind of grouping around, like talking, like, yeah, this is weird. Like, I wonder what's going on. And then all of a sudden, Glover comes in a fucking like a white van and like slides open the door and like, get in, you know? We're like, all right, you know, like, start crawling in. We don't know where we're going or anything like that. We're all competing against each other. We're like, what's up, dude? And savages, dude. And this is 200 and below. And I walk around 150, dude, you know, like right now. Like, and I just needed some action, dude, some excitement. Yeah. I just sold my business. Broke up with my girl for 8 years. Yeah. I was just going through it. And this was my life. And I had dedicated my life to jiu-jitsu. Sold my business for jiu-jitsu. And then the world is like, and Fauci's like, don't touch each other. And I'm like, no, dude, I'm not doing it. So you get these underground tournaments like Glover was having. So he picks us up. He drives us over to the they confiscated all our cell phones. I guess the logic at the time was they didn't want everyone gathering at one location, you know, because of the pandemic and the lockdown. Right. You weren't allowed to do things like that. And so they had a big box. And this is the part you might have to edit, of course.
You know, but like, I'll cut off most of the stuff. The locations.
It was awesome, man, because it was like all these and jiu-jitsu guys and everything, and it was this vibe in the atmosphere, like, oh man, like the world is like shutting down, the pandemic, but we're all like these fucking like rebels. And I met some really cool people I still talk to today. And
this was at purple belt, right?
That was purple belt. Okay. Yeah. I have just got my brown belt a couple months ago. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much, man. And you obviously know we haven't talked about it, but the reason I can't compete.
Well, let's get into that now.
Okay.
So you're training all over the place, and then let's talk about the incident.
Yeah. So this is maybe what people will be real interested in, because it's crazy. You know, it's really good shape, perfect health. I don't drink much. I'll have like a beer every now and then after training, and I was smoking weed at the time. But apart from that, I haven't done like hard drugs and stuff like that since my early 20s. But I was actually here over in Marin. I was rolling with this like blue belt here, and he was getting ready for a tournament, and he kneed me in the head, and it was like no big deal. Like, you get kneed in and kind of shook up a little bit, shake it off and whatever. And then, I just got hit in the head, and I go to this really big guy, and it was like already like, I'm not going to like, what am I going to do? Like, go hell hard against 270 pro. I'm like, I'm just kind of playing, start passing guard a little bit. And almost right away, I felt this like cramping from like shoulder to shoulder, like intense cramping. And I had actually felt it before, about like 2 or 3 weeks before, at this gym as well. And I had summed it up before to dehydration, because I had never felt anything like this. Like, I described it later like as like little gremlins inside my body, like ripping apart my muscles. Like,
so the cramping, is it happen? Are you feeling it in your back, shoulder,
in my back,
to shoulder,
shoulder,
or front shoulder to shoulder?
Back shoulder to shoulder.
Okay.
Yeah, back shoulder to shoulder. And nauseating pain, right? And wow. I was like, okay, first thaw my head, push through it, get through the roll, don't be disrespectful. And about 2 minutes in, I can't fucking take it anymore. And I told him, I was like, I can't do this anymore. And he kind of looked at me like weird. And I went out in the back right over here. We're sitting on the mats, so it's like reminiscent of it. But I went out, I laid down, I kind of tried to puke a little bit. But I came back in, and everybody was sitting around. And I saw Brett in here, former training partner, and he knows me real well. And he told me, like, you don't look good at all. And I was like, okay, I just need to go sit in my truck that was sitting like right in front of the gym, and just turn on my AC, because I was feeling so nauseous. I'm like, something's fucking wrong. And last thing I remember, man, was like sitting in my truck, and like it's like everything that got really intensified. And I looked in the mirror, and I just saw my eyes kind of like shoot back into my skull, and everything got like kind of vortexy, you know. And I passed unconscious. And then I came to, and my truck was on.
Still on with the AC.
Yeah, still on with the AC. And so I thought I was driving. Like, whoa. But I woke up and I was like kind of in paralysis. I couldn't move anything and I couldn't see anything and it was all fuzzy. And so I kind of like braced myself for impact, you know, like, you know, I was like, my fucking truck's on. I can't see. It was almost like a dream. And then I came to, obviously the truck was in park. I wasn't driving. And I saw the gym come into my like focus. And I was like, holy shit, something is wrong. I just like pass out. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? First instinct was to call Brett because he was the last one I saw. And I told him, I was like, dude, there's something seriously wrong with me, dude. I don't know what's going on. And he had left already. So I don't know how long I was unconscious. And I opened the door of my truck. And that's right when the vertigo started. It was the most intense spinning I've ever felt in my life.
Wow.
I started puking and throwing up. Brett shows up. We collectively decide I need to go to the ER. I guess just to talk about it right now, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life, not calling an ambulance.
Really?
Yeah, and I get emotional even talking about it.
Whoa. So what's the significance of the ambulance then?
If I went into the ambulance, they would have put an EKG on my heart, and they would have known I was having a massive heart attack. Because I went in by myself, I spent about 30 minutes in a waiting room. They finally saw me. I was like holding, wow. I was holding Brett's leg, spinning out of control, holy about to go God. Out of consciousness. I was panicking because I had no idea what was going on. And it was incredibly scary. I had a big scar on the side of my face from when that blue belt kicked me. So they thought it was a concussion. And they pumped me full of Ativan, put me in a CAT scan. They didn't see anything. And at that point, Brett had called my father, who actually happened to be in town. And he came over and I was completely out of it. I don't remember much of this. You know, this is just kind of what people told me. I was on a lot of drugs. They pumped me full of Ativan, anti-anxiety. Because I was like, couldn't breathe, wow. Spinning, just like panicking. And they told my dad I was having a panic attack. And my dad said, no. He's not having a panic attack. He just sold his business. He just bought a brand new truck and he's living his dream, traveling, teaching jiu-jitsu as a single guy in his 30s.
Yeah.
He's not having a panic attack. And I was just like, what's happening? And that's the thing that's really fucked, is my dad really begged them to keep me there. Wow. But they were adamant and they sent me home that night. They did not put an EKG on me. And for that reason, if they had put an EKG on me, they would have seen the clot and would have done an angioplasty to balloon the clot to the side to allow blood and oxygen to my brain. They didn't do that, so they sent me home thinking I was a panic attack, and I suffered in my uncle's bathtub for 13 hours, and I was sitting in the bathtub because the cramps were so painful. Wow. And the hot Epsom salt, I just sat there. My dad said at one point I turned blue, like actual color blue.
So is it like these shoulder cramps again?
Oh, yeah.
That have come back?
Yeah, all over my body. Just painful, in and out of consciousness all night for about 13 hours. Holy and at that point, I had enough. And I was like, I need to go back to the ER. This is it's not getting better.
So during this time, it's doing damage.
During this time, I have 100% blockage of my left ventricle, and I'm depriving my body of oxygen, of blood and oxygen, of my brain and to my heart. And what they say on the angioplasty is that within 90 minutes of signs of a heart attack, which is numbness, shortness of breath, passing unconscious, and muscle cramps and pains, you know, all symptoms that I reported, you're supposed to do the angioplasty within 90 minutes. And in the medical journals, they say, if you don't do it within 90 minutes, irreversible damage to your heart and brain and gray matter in your brain occur. So I went home for 13 hours. And then I came back. And that is the one thing I do remember is when I came back, they then put an EKG on me. I've had probably 30 EKGs on me since this incident. And it takes 20 fucking seconds, you know, to put an EKG. They then put an EKG on me. I'll never forget the nurse's reaction. She just looked like she just saw a ghost, you know. She called the code, whatever, and everybody rushed me, and all of a sudden they're shaving my groin and prepping me for surgery and shit. And I stayed in the hospital for 4 days, and then I took an Uber right here, came back to practice because I'm obsessed, and it's like principal thing, you know. I'm never going to stop, you know, despite anything that happened. And
So you have a heart attack, full-on heart attack. That's what's happening. And you go home with a heart attack, continuing to suffer this heart attack.
Well, you know, I'm learning a lot about heart attacks. They actually said that I was having the heart attack. I had the heart attack before this whole thing happened.
That makes sense.
This is the result of the clot. They actually, one idea, and a lot of people just don't know. It seems like a lot of things in life, a lot of people just don't know. You know, I've been all over. I've probably seen almost 20 specialists now. I flew on my own dime to the Cleveland Clinic. They're the best in the world. Portland at Sunnyside, advanced heart failure in Sacramento, in Marin. Now I'm being seen at Stanford Cardiology.
Stanford, right.
The long, long story short is there was so much damage that happened that night to my heart that I'm going to need a new heart eventually.
Mm-hmm. So you're a candidate now for a heart transplant.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And how they measure that, I guess, is two things. One being the ejection fraction, and that's like recorded by an echocardiogram or a heart MRI. And that's imaging and a algorithm basically to see how efficient your heart is pumping. My regular heart is pumping around 65 to 75%, which is, that's healthy, even though it's 65, 75. I'm at a 24. And they say anything under 25 is a candidacy for a heart transplant. The really confusing part about this is I'm 35 years old and an athlete. If there's any medical people listening to this right now, my troponin, you know, you'll correct me because I've probably said it wrong. Troponin, whatever the level was 47.48. My buddy Sam is a surgeon, was saying that, you know, an average level is 0.04. You know, I was 47.48. It's an enzyme that your heart produces. And he said he had never heard of a number that high. And the only reason he thinks I survived this long with a fully blockage and depriving my brain and heart of oxygen is because of the athletic lifestyle and jiu-jitsu lifestyle I lived prior to the heart attack. And I'm very intense with my recovery and my training for jiu-jitsu prior to this. Ice immersions, Wim Hof, 100 pounds in a 64 gallon recycling bin, and sauna and runs and diet and everything, you know, the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. And I'm pretty confident living like that was saved me through it, because according to any advanced heart failure cardiologist, I should have not been able to last that long with a block in my ventricle.
So let's talk about like where you're at now, because you're back, you're flow rolling, you know, now and then, and you have these devices from your body that we can see. Can you describe what these things are?
Sure. I have a subcutaneous defibrillator on the left side of my rib cage. And basically what I heard,
it looks like a box, people. That's kind of like under his skin. a little box, like a cigarette pack or something.
Yeah, like a pack of cigarettes. Yeah, about the same size. Kind of ovally shaped. It's fucking weird, man. I see if you type in subcutaneous defibrillator or SICD in YouTube, you'll see a really hot blonde girl that has one, and she's talking about, she's like, it's like having a mini hospital inside of me. That's what my friends and I say, like, I have a mini hospital. And that's what it is, basically. It's like those AEDs or whatever they're called, external defibrillators at pools,
right,
and stuff.
Sure.
It's the same thing, essentially. It's just inside of me.
That's so crazy.
And it's got it will detect an arrhythmia or a missed beat.
And then fire.
And then they say it's, I've heard it like three things. It's like getting kicked by a donkey. It's like getting kicked by a horse. Or it's like getting hit in the chest with a baseball bat.
Looking forward to that, huh?
Well, it's weird because it can happen anytime. I don't know when. It may never happen.
Yeah.
It may just start going off, you know. If I'm boiling like on the ground and it starts fucking shocking me and my partner, it's like, I've never had a device inside of me, so it's very weird.
And then in your chest, there's something else.
So there's the computer that's on the side, and then it has leads, actual metal leads that will conduct the electricity. So essentially, it's like a triangle around my heart, cocooning like a trifecta, and it's like placing like a pad, like ACD, right around there, and shooting electricity in there to jumpstart my heart again.
Wow.
So every time, if and when it goes off, I can consider that like I would have died, but because of this thing inside me, I get another shot. So it's a mind fuck with Roland. I do have like a pad. It's the same type. It's like a rubber pad for athletes that have defibrillators in them. And it's just this pad that kind of, it's a rubber pad that goes into a rash guard. And you and me were talking actually before, you're like, man, dude, like fucking rash guards is always stinking. Like, you know, you can't get the stink out of them, dude. And I've heard bleach and stuff work, but it sucks for me because I have these customized rash guards now for my ICD pad to block my ICD. And I'm just going to be buying these things for the rest of my life. I know, you know. And or trying to, I was wondering, I was looking at it, I was like, it's got to be better. I got to find something better, you know, because this actually, maybe it's called a Vital Beats, I think his name is, but it doesn't really cover the front of my chest. And so a lot of my jujitsu is changing. I can't do that like chest to chest pressure. Like when I get on your back, you know, in a flow roll, obviously, I'm not going hard right now. I'm way more inclined to do like a triangle from the back, you know, and it's kind of locked down. Anything like to take away from like my
chest pressure, torso pressure. Yeah.
Like when I'm passing, I'm doing like knee cuts and I'm going for you, trying to pin down your wrists down to the ground and like walk around and like kind of, and doing like way more like distance jujitsu little bit. What the jujitsu I do right now is all moderated. I always preface, if I'm new with you and you're upper belt, I probably stick away from white belts and blue belts right now, especially strangers when I'm traveling.
Yeah.
I want to keep it technical, and my elevator pitch is don't break the machine.
Yeah. You know,
that's what we got to do. And usually when I say that to people, it kind of like breaks down that barrier of like, especially if you're traveling gyms, you're an upper belt and stuff, you got kind of a target on your back. People want to show you what's up and, you know, show you their language and everything. So I think I just have to get really good at pitching myself and say, hey, you have the wind, you know, like you can do whatever you want to me. And it kind of like diffuses everything a little bit, and it gets people in the mindset like, oh, I got to protect this guy, you know, and then we can start having those conversations. And I can get pretty active with it, you know, because as long as it's methodical and everyone is being very thoughtful with each movement, it is really the essence of what flow rolling is.
Yes.
Some people don't even like know what they've heard flow rolling, but they'll never understand it. They never understand it, you know, because they have it ingrained in them, like kill, 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 go hard. This is why we're here. And, you know, everybody knows it's like, we're not going to get technical and really good at this until we step back and slow down and lose our egos and let the other person have a lot of opportunities and learn from, you know, each other during the roll, you know. And
did you flow roll much before this?
I did actually. And that came from doing opening up 6 a.m. classes for so long, because there's like a lot of old guys in there and stuff going out, and they have families and they're getting beat up at night and they come to the morning classes because we're really heavy on drilling. I love just drilling, and I love hard rounds, man. Don't get me wrong. But I just really loved, especially right when I got my purple belt, I was like, really heavy focus on just like just drilling and flowing and losing the ego in the gym, because I wanted to go test my jujitsu in the competitions, and that's where I needed to be good, you know. But I had like just no problem letting people, and I guess it was also I was in charge and I was a lower belt, and I really wanted people to learn. So you're not going to let people learn if you're just like trying to win the whole time, you know? Something that morning coach taught me is just like that humility, man. Just like letting people, not letting them tap you out by any means, you know, but it's more if you run into a problem, like a frame, or you try something and it gets countered and it doesn't work. It's more of like accepting that in the moment and then going with it, which often leads to you getting swept or you getting passed or something, something that's not good for you. But it's accepting the mistake like mid-roll, opposed to if we're rolling really hard, I run into that blockade and I'm like, I'm not accepting this shit. You know, like I got in a bad position. I'm not tapping. I'm not getting swept. I'm not doing it. And that's this, where the aggression comes from. Even talking about, I'm like thinking, you get like tough. I'm like, and I love that, but it's like, that's not flowing and that's not learning because you're using your strength and you're cheating. You're not using true jujitsu and flowing. What a lot of people keep telling me is that they love it. And I hope they're not just trying to make me feel better. And they really love it. And I think they do.
I'll be that guy. I love it. I learn a lot from it. It's funny you mentioned drilling too, because I just talked to Nick the Tooth. And that's what he said too, that the greatest amount of learning is not really in rolling. It's in drilling and flow rolling as well.
I think we have an American like Rocky mentality here, like push, 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 at least for me. Mm. Before my heart attack, that's all. I mean, my heroes are like David Goggins and Jocko mm-hmm. and Joe Rogan mm-hmm. and people that like to push themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. I was really into hot yoga and vinyasana mm-hmm. before this. And I always wanted to see like that limit, you mm-hmm. know? And that quote from Goggins, like most people quit at 20%. Mm-hmm. I knew it, you know? And mm-hmm. it was actually kind of like proved positive in my business. I had a little local dog retail store downtown Mill Valley, and we ran a commercial custom dog hiking business out of it. And I knew I could sell anybody on my dog walks because I tracked every single hike. I photographed every single hike. I used apps to go check the dogs in and out. It was just kind of like my principles, this pure accountability and verification, you know? It gave me a confidence to sell, you know, like I know I'm better than everyone else in here. I just wanted to outwork everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. that has always been my mentality. It's outwork everybody. I'm not even the smartest person, you yeah. know, like yeah, no, I got adopted actually into a really smart family, you know, yeah, and yeah. So genetically, I've always been very well aware. Yeah. I'm not the most intellectually like gifted person, you know, right, right. like a mathematician or.
Well, there's that engineer. Old saying, right? Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. Right?
Yeah, yeah, I like it. Yeah, yeah. I like it. And that's what I got by them, man. And now yeah. It's tough. For me, a lot of the problems in my life right now is like coming from people telling me to slow down. Mm. And the nicest way I always put it is like what Trifon was saying is, you know, that the universe expands and contracts. And, you know, I was expanding, exploding for so long and doing these double, triple days and driving to Ventura solo to do underground jiu-jitsu tournaments and like, and just trying to like live, do as much as possible and like, and just beating my body. Mm-hmm. And he's like, now it might not be the time you want, but it's like what you have to do is contract, you know, and you need to look like inward. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it happens to everybody, you know, at some point. That's what life is, you know.
Well, you were one of those guys I identified quickly in the academy where I'm like, I could learn a lot from this guy.
Oh, thanks.
And then I noticed that you were always giving really great advice when people asked you. So touching back on your teaching, whatever it is that attracts you to teach, do you enjoy? It seems like you enjoy teaching. It seems like you have a lot to offer there.
I love teaching so much, man. It's everything for me. It's saving my life right now. Not being able to compete, not being able to go hard in roles. You know, I'm actually helping out a friend of mine at Willows Jiu-Jitsu Academy up in Willows, California. It's off the I-5 in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Bunch of like just kind of like roughneck kind of misfit crew and yeah. like this like all walks of life. And this, you'll run into like, I mean, there's like one like just nasty big bluebell. I think probably 240 or something. Just mm-hmm. like ex-military, just like monster. You'll have like some guy like that. And then you have a guy who's just lost like 150 pounds, you know, just getting his life together. Some recovering addict. And we all have a common goal. And whatever your experience level is and whatever your goals are to lose weight, be a champion competitor, we're all coming in here and wanting to like do something together. And man, I've always thought that was so powerful. And I love talking. And the way I teach is less of, you know, I know what I'm talking about. And mm-hmm. you guys like all this, like try to listen in on that. Mm-hmm. I really love just talking like out loud and then like opening it up and saying, hey, this is what I think I know. I'm mm-hmm. pretty fucking sure I know. I know, man, I haven't studied something like the suicide choke so in depthly. I was born and my tongue was connected to my gums and they had to clip it, so I had a speech impediment.
Dude,
for the
Dave
first
has all
part
these
life.
Stories of course you were born that way. So let's get back to the hard conversation, right? In terms of like your time, the reality of like,
yeah,
we're in terms of like what did they tell you, how much time do you have with this heart
yeah.
versus the percentages is if you get a transplant, what are the statistics in terms of time there? And then how are you reconciling all that?
It's crazy, dude. Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, I've seen like 16 different advanced heart failure cardiologists who all have different opinions. Mm-hmm. You know, they're dealing with people in their 60s and people who are alcoholics and smoke. And man, you see people online. I just run into people up in the Gulch last weekend, these mountain people. He said he had like 7 fucking stents and he's just sitting there drinking beer, smoking cigarettes. I'm like, you know what? I've given up. Like, after this has happened, I'm like, I haven't smoked pot since. I love smoking pot, dude, but like, I care about my body. So 100%. I'm doing everything that it takes to get back to optimize. That's my life. And I want to optimize. And so the gas tank is tough. You know, that's the most crippling thing is not having my cardio. And that gives me severe depression, to be honest.
What does that feel like? Can you describe it? Like,
Even today, you know, with Paulo, I roll with Paulo after we were kind of more talking about technique and stuff, and that's cool. But like when Paulo and I start kind of like getting into the movements and the flows, around like 3 or 4 minutes in, man, it's like breathing through a straw, like an asthma attack. Kind of, and I just got to stop and listen to my body and then take big, deep breaths. That's usually when the kind of depression kicks in, because it's like, man, I used to go fucking 10 straight rounds, 6 minute rounds, you know? I don't stop.
Mm-hmm. So it still hits you. There's no, like, you're not at the point where you've accepted this yet. It still bugs me
all the time. Yeah, I was in North Carolina, I think I was telling you, and this guy was getting ready for the pants, and I was like, hey, bro, you want like flow roll? And he's like, I don't flow roll, you know? And I was like, fuck me, right? Yeah. Yeah. Like, like, damn, it sucked, because I was like, in my mind, in what's left of my heart, man, I can fucking go, dude. Yeah. Like, I love going hard. I love it so much. It's the most purest thing in the world that I've found. I've never fought, you know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've fought with no technique. I've never done an MMA fight. But like, I don't want to fight. I want to do this thing, jujitsu, man. I've never found anything like it. It's so pure. It's so honest.
Yeah.
And I feel by prefacing the role saying I'm injured and I have something in me and my heart's bad, it's already diminishing the authenticity. So that's where the depression comes from. You know, the only solution to that problem is appreciation and being grateful for what I have now, because everything's temporary. Of course, I lost my athleticism. It's just I lost it way before than I thought I was going to lose it. For the condition of my heart, I do need a heart transplant at some point. Mm-hmm. And they're basically waiting for me to get sick enough. And it's a really difficult situation to be in, because you Google stage 3 heart failure is what I have right now. And first thing comes in is life expectancy is 5 years, you know?
And Dave, how old are you?
I'm 35.
Okay.
You know, and I've already talked to all my cardiologists, and they're impressed with like my abilities. I took a VO2 max test and I came in the 70th percentile on the VO2 max, and that's in the general public. So it's pretty pathetic for our general population that I can come in the 70th percentile with this much of a heart, you know, or it's in a testament of like my athleticism. But the fact is I'm in the 70%, and there's people with ejection fractions like in the hospital right now that are just laying in bed. They can't cook themselves breakfast with the same quality of damage my heart's in. And, you know, it kind of brings up this study I heard on Rogan's about placebo knee surgeries. Hmm. I don't know if you ever saw this, but what they did, something like 20, I'm paraphrasing, but they took like 20 people. They cut open 10 of their legs. They cut open all their legs, but 10 of them, they actually did meniscus repair or scope or whatever, and then 10 they didn't do shit. They just opened it up, and they had like the same amount of like recovery time, you know. And I think so much of this is like in our minds, you know. And I think the same people who do this, they did the same shit with like slipped disc, and all the symptoms were so varied across the board, but everything was the same. So what I'm saying, it kind of parallels into what jiu-jitsu is for me. And the reason after the heart attack, I took an Uber to class, or after I got my surgery and got this fucking defibrillator installed in me, I went to fucking class after I was all fucked up on fentanyl. And I was just driving by on the 80 and I saw the sign and I was like, antelope. And my buddy was like, you want to go to class right now? I'm like, it's like that time. And they were just like chilling. And it was just like, It was more like just principle, you know, like you're not going to get me off of this mat. You know, it's like I remember I made like a commitment to myself that I'm going to get my black belt, you know, and I want to do it so bad because it's so hard. It's so hard, you know, and there's so many reasons to make you quit, man, with like, you know, it's like the nastiest, rolling with people and skin stuff and just like broken bones and toes. And if it's not that, it's the sheer, the humiliation and like you suck as a person and an athlete, and just getting through that and accepting and be like, I guess I suck. And like, just go on and make myself not suck anymore. And I just, I'm so in love and with everything in the process and getting the belts, you know, getting promoted and being like that pressure, you know, and like being like, okay, now it's time. Like you're a new belt. Everybody you've been training around. It's like, I don't think good people, you don't go home and like have a brown belt where you just get a brown belt and then not come into class like the next week, you know, it's like, you're going to be doing, maybe I need to do an extra 10 pushups. Maybe I got to do extra 15 sit-ups today. It's like, I'm a brown belt. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe I just need to go support somebody a little bit more in the gym or do get a little more involved in or represent this belt. And I love that in society that we have this accountability, you know, we're holding our community accountable. I think just like we're living in such a horrible society where people are so against each other and so competitive, you know, and to come into a place where everyone has the same goal and
growing and nurturing each other.
And then you get, and that's why I love beginners too, man, like in doing the beginner classes, you know, like watch someone get their first stripe and you're like, oh man, it's like, it's to this day, dude, it's just like, I just love it. You know, I love it. I love watching the kids, you know, like looking at the adults, like seeing us do these things and like lining up and bowing and paying respect to each other and giving each other admiration and pieces of tape and shit. You know, it's like, it's cool. You know, it's just really cool thing to do with your life when we, and just having almost lost it. Like we want to do, like the little time we have doing cool shit. And I wasted it so much earlier in my life drinking and partying, man. You know, like it's just, if any like young kids would ever listen to this or like just need to be talked to, it's like they need direction. I wish I had this when I was younger. Oh, you know?
Hey, man.
Yeah. So another thing I want to ask you about too was academy culture and the pros and cons and the, you know, the light and dark that you've seen in terms of So, for instance, if you ran an academy or something, you know, what would you and what would you not do?
Let's interesting. Frame it like that. Well, not do. I would not hook up with any girls in my gym. That is the number one. Maybe I'll put that on my wall.
You wouldn't fish off the pier, as they say. In business.
That's, we talked about before. That's like one of the biggest things. My dad always taught me that, man. You don't hook up with women that you work with and that I went to school with. Or jujitsu, if I have respect for what I'm doing, I'm not gonna go and spend that time hooking up with girls. I'm gonna spend the time doing the craft at hand. Now, that's a very regimented like thing to say, even like listen to it. And like, and I know people, like my coach Chad is married to Sarah McMahon, like, you know, legend UFC fighter and stuff. And they're very in love and they are very good people and they run their academy and it's fucking awesome. And that's great. And definitely don't like not like go after your like love of your life, you know, because of these rules and stuff. But I hate it, man. It's like if you are going to date somebody in the gym, you better make sure it's serious, or else in my mind you don't respect jiu-jitsu. You know, so that's it, kind of going in, you can see, you know, how into it I get. I just see it over and over again. It's like, what are you here for? Are you here to hook up with people? And that goes for the girls too, you know. If you're there and you just think this is like a like socializing place, and it's like, I take it a little more seriously than that. This is a place where I'm working out my demons, my vulnerabilities, you know. If I put myself in the girl's situation, you know, I'm coming in here very vulnerable. And for any like high level coach or black belt or something, kind of like capitalize off that, I always thought it was gross. So that's the first thing. Actually, the jiu-jitsu, which is a little more important, I always thought it'd be cool to call it like style points jiu-jitsu. Because that's the kind of game I have. I like going for really cool stuff, you know, rodeo chokes and suicide chokes, and people are like, oh shit, that's fucking crazy, and flying triangles, and like, and my coach hates it. He just told me, he's like, it's garbage jiu-jitsu, David, like, it's not high level. And I'm like, I know it's not. But it's fun. And that's what you, and it's like the kind of the essence, like obviously, if I did have an academy, I would really want to have just a high level, well accomplished, competitive black belt as one of the instructors. I think that's invaluable. I think that you need to have someone that has competition and that's been through it. And if not have done a significant amount of competition, at least like has been around that culture, you know? I love teaching like the newest people, you know, like people that don't know anything about it, like the meat and potatoes.
So you're more of a group class kind of guy or a privates kind of guy or?
Oh no, group class. Group class. The more people, the better. Okay. So the way I teach is the exact same way I got through school. And I was always horrible at test taking, right? But I agreed. I had an agreement with my dad that he would pay for my college if I could graduate cum laude. And when I got to USF, I think I like cried the first B minus I got, you know, because I was like, this is going to be fucking hard. And, you know, and so I was like, okay, I'm not the best test taker. I know that I'm not the smartest person, but I will work harder than everybody here. And so I would raise my hand so much, they would tell me not to raise my hand anymore. Every class, I would ask the whole class verbally out loud, like, who wants to meet to study more about this after class? Every extra credit, if there wasn't extra credit, I go to the office hours and say, there needs to be extra credit. I had three B pluses officially contested to A minuses, you know, and that's kind of like my approach is just really hard work. And the most important part about it was getting people together in the group and talking. And so I didn't know the most about the information, very similar to jiu-jitsu. I also have a really bad memory sometimes, or a selective memory. Same. You know, so a lot of the times how I learn is just by talking out loud, and I have no problem being humiliated or being incorrect.
The dumb guy in quotes or whatever. Dumb questions.
No problem. No problem at all, dude. Like, so I know, like I said, going back to the suicide joke, I've studied this fucking joke more than I studied my major in college. You know, I've been looking at this specific joke probably for like 6 years. Everything about it, the telegraphing, different things, just subtleties, you know, like over and over again, like all the times that people go to sleep versus not going to sleep. Why do they go to sleep? You know, I'm sadistic enough to write down every person's name in my phone that I put to sleep. There are now 8 of them after I put the guy to sleep. With heart failure, dude, it was actually really fun. I just put someone to sleep the other night during the demonstration. He didn't tap. It was a good conversation to talk about tapping after on the Bravo choke.
Important lesson, yes.
It was fun to still do it. But that is kind of like a long way of saying how I like to teach. Very inclusive to everybody, dude. Like, I'll be here, like, I don't care if you're wearing a white belt, you might know a little piece of information or a little angle, or you might have a question, you know. So I like open it up and I just like to talk, you know. I'm kind of like a stoner, you know, so I kind of like to get a little high and just like, man, let's just dive into this jiu-jitsu. And then you just start talking about it and you get really into it. And I feel I've always had a good intuition for whether or not I'm connecting with someone. And if they start kind of looking away, not really paying attention, it's kind of why I don't really like teaching kids. You know, like I love connecting with adults. I love connecting that piece of information and showing you a mounted triangle, and then you hit that fucking mounted triangle, and then seeing that expression on your face. I'm so addicted to it, dude. I can't get enough of it, you know. It's teaching is like has everything with that, you know. But I think the best teachers are the ones that can take a step back and be like, and say like, yeah, I don't know about this. This is not my body type. This is not my move. This is not my genre. Let's get an expert who does study, because
great point.
You know, anybody who does jiu-jitsu, it's like this shit is infinite. It is so much. It's so much. I actually make this analogy with a guitar playing a lot. I recommend that, you know, guitar is like, acoustic guitar is like gi. And electric guitar is no-gi, you know? And I recommend people start playing acoustic guitar so you build up the calluses on your fingers and the dexterity. And then when you transition to electric guitar, it's very easy. It's much easier. And I always thought it was kind of the same analogy. You know, you start off gi, then you kind of go over and, I don't know. People probably have different arguments for that.
I like the analogy. Cool.
I always like with guitar, I was in rehab when I was 17 years old, I think, you know, and this counselor told me I was playing this guitar and it wasn't that good, but I could play a couple songs. And he was like, just play the same song. Don't give up. And I don't know why, like, some things just stick with you. You know, I was just a kid, but like, I always had that mentality, man. Like, I don't care if I suck. Like, I'm just going to play the song and master the song. And then you start mastering the song. And why guitar is so similar to jujitsu is once you start mastering that song, like, you recognize, like, oh, this other song has that same type of pattern or the same hammer on, or my fingers are matched up in the same thing. And it's just like jujitsu. It's like, if you don't give up on it, and I just like, just guard. I'm just saying, like, at least you're in there and you're going to learn some things, you know, eventually. You just can't quit, you know? And that's the thing with me. Like, I'm really good at not quitting.
Do you think you should have your instructor's game?
I guess, first off, I don't really have one coach, although I am getting his gym logo tattooed on my neck today. So if I had any gym, it would be Precision Jiu-Jitsu. But I have a lot of gyms, man, like Lone Wolf and ATT even like, I feel like Paragon and Atos accepts me now because I'm so such homies with some of their boys and shit, you know, and like, and Half Gracie, and then you know, did all the, and the plate, the whole wall places in Maui and stuff like that.
Here
in
North Bay, they love
you.
And
North Bay GJ, I can't believe that. Of course North Bay. I almost died in the parking lot, you know. It's and Trifon, and this is actually where I came up. A lot of my guys from gym down the street came over here. Yeah, I got a lot of different coaches, a lot of different games. I think jiu-jitsu is, for me, a language, and it's however you speak it. I don't think there's a correct way or an incorrect way to speak a language. It's kind of like a new thought off of my head. I'm just having, like, you know, like super waspy white people, you know, like this is the culture, and like, or like silverware and spoons, like this is the way. There's always that pompous, there's always that pontificating kind of type, you know, stuff. People always think their way is right, you know. Everybody thinks their way is right, like, oh, this is the right way to do this thing. It's like, man, I don't think anyone's right, dude.
That's how we got stuck not playing the leg game for years and years because of that mentality.
And then you crack the system and people are like, oh yeah, there's half another part of the body. It's like, you know, but it's like, and I've always been, I saw that as regressive in society. I think when you think you know a secret and you don't share it, I think you're holding yourself back. I think life is too short for that shit, dude. Don't like, you know, oh, I got this technique. My gym is the only one that teaches this technique. Man, like, fuck you, dude. It's a short life, dude. How about go and share that idea, test it as much as possible, you know? And that's just with anything. That's just with the way you think, the way you treat people, your morals, everything. Go test it constantly across the board, and then make up your mind about it.
The reason I asked the question originally was, I often see white belts saying, oh no, but X instructor says to do A, B, C, or does A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of a parroting that. And it seems like as they evolve, they learn, hey, my body type may not that, maybe it needs to be ACB for me.
Exactly. Well, I always point that out. It's funny you bring that up. I'm saying, like, what works for me, it's probably not going to work for you, you know? Look at my little tiny wrist, dude. And I'm super strong, you know? Like, I fit these wrists, like, perfect. I'm going to get tattoos, actually, on my wrists as bullseyes so I can show people where to put them on the artery, you know? And I just got really great little tiny wrists, you know? They're, like, strong little wrists. I choke people really good. Like, you know, so my chokes might not work for a guy with big fat wrists, you know? Right. It's like, or short little stubby legs. Maybe you don't want to try my flying triangle game, dude. You know, it's like, because it's really crazy, it's spontaneous, and I don't even try it in the gym because I don't like doing it to my friend. I just get like hella on adrenaline and I jump at the guy, you know, and it's like, you know, so yeah, my game. But I think that's, again, going back to the beauty of what jiu-jitsu is, there's no rules, there's no limits, you know, it's expression of our body, and that's why it's an art, you know, and that's why it's infinite. So, I mean, for sure, listen to your coach, you know, but it's kind of like, A Beautiful Mind. John Nash won a Nobel Award for Economics. And yeah, I think he quoted saying that going to the classroom every day is going to ruin the ability for original thought. Mm. Listen to your coaches for sure, because they've been in it a long time, but listen to everybody. That's what I think, you know, listen to everybody and know that. Yeah, your body's different than someone in their 40s is going to be way different game than someone in their 20s, you know? I think, yeah, it's important to be like just always like open-minded, you know, with it. And yeah, really point out what you said. Yeah, knowing what works for me might not work for you because of our body, our age, right, skill level, all that kind of stuff.
And Dave, if the people want to get more information about you, where can they learn more about you and watch your journey to this whole crazy life of ours?
Right on. Yeah. Check out my Instagram. It's kind of a new thing. I'm posting a lot about my heart and, you know, like how I have to get around training with a real difficult injury. So if you want to check me out, my my Instagram is jitsutraveler_86. Check out my Jeff Glover match. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, really cool.
Pretty proud of it.
Thank you so much for your time. And everyone out there, thanks for listening again another week. I'm Adolfo Fronda, your host, and we will see you guys next time. Thank you again, Dave.
Thank you so much for having me, dude. You're a really great interviewer. I listened to a couple of your podcasts on the traffic on the way down here, and I always enjoy the conversations and definitely going to continue listening.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Dave.